Call the meeting to order, the Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee. We have minutes from the first day of March. Someone needs to make a motion to approve. Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion.
All right. Any corrections, comments? All those in favor of the minutes from the 1st of March, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. We have an action-packed committee coming up. So, glad you're here. I had just one, I guess, quick announcement. I got a letter the other day, or a note from Steve Swiggum. He said to say thank you to the committee for the work that you've done on the Board of Regents process. Voted for him, I guess, it doesn't matter at this point. He just says thank you. He's ready to go to work. So, with that, our first bill is House File 1878, if the author is around. Oh, okay. Just stand by. If I could just add one thing, I hope to be very efficient today. Ask questions, make them concise. Hopefully the answers are the same. Because we do have a pretty good agenda. Welcome, Representative.
So I understand Trace for the first time is it a case.
Oh, my goodness.
Kind of an unwritten rule, I heard, so I'm going to.
We are loaded with treats. I don't remember in the years I've been here that I've ever remembered to do that. I guess it's,
I have a good that. Memory, so I learned from some of the other committees, and I would not think of coming to this committee and not bringing treats.
Okay.
So.
I even ducked my birthdays. House File 1878 is before the committee, and the intentions for that to be held over possible inclusion. So, Representative Barr, you can go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm delighted to sit here and present to you House File 1878, which is on automatic admission. This bill would allow students who are in the top 10% of their class to be automatically admitted to one of our public institutions. And I just want to say that I personally benefited from this when I was growing up. I was in the top 10% of my class and is guaranteed automatic admission where I grew up on Long Island in New York, so I'm very excited to carry this bill. It would be for baccalaureate degrees, so four-year degrees. It would require certain things of those students that are seeking automatic admission, so it doesn't preclude them from actually applying, and they would have to do that within a two-year period of graduating from a Minnesota public or private school. They would also have some residency requirements for that as well. As I mentioned, they would still have to go through the application process, but this would just assure them of admission into the schools. We would also have some reporting required around that. The reason that I feel that this is so important is that we appropriate a very large sum of money to the school systems, and it's well in the over $1 billion a year. And I think it really behooves us to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to make sure that our own best students can take advantage of the assets that we have invested into our public post-secondary schools, and that their hardworking parents have paid into those institutions as well. So on that note, I will be happy to answer questions, and I know that we do have some other testifiers.
Okay. First of all, any questions from members? Oh, I'm told we do have an amendment. Okay. Maybe you're not aware of that.
Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A1 amendment.
All right. Would you like to just briefly explain what that amendment is or does?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in light of the emphasis that we place not only on out-state but in-state scholarship, and also the emphasis that the higher institutions a place on that. I think it's in good keeping that we award scholarship dollars based upon that. And for any more technical nature of that, I understand Mr. Hopkins can address those issues.
All right.
Mr. Chair, if I might also add, I do view this as a friendly amendment.
Would you repeat that?
I view this as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Does anyone need any further clarification on the amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's adopted. Okay. Now, back to questions for the author. Or we'll invite testifiers to come down. I guess that's what we'd like to do at this point. Welcome.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself.
Yes, I'm Robert McMaster, and I'm the Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Education at the University of Minnesota.
Welcome.
And good afternoon, Chair Nornes and committee members. I'm Rachel Hernandez. I'm the Associate Vice Provost for Enrollment Management and the Director of Admissions at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we think this is an interesting idea. From our perspective, in terms of enrollment management and admissions at the U of M, we do have a few concerns and comments that we'd like to make. One is we use something at the university called holistic review. And holistic review really gets at a comprehensive admissions process that looks at a set of primary and then secondary factors in the admissions process. So the primary factors would be those that you might expect, the ACT and or SAT, the grades, the high school rank, and some other characteristics. The secondary characteristics, which are really just as important, get into other kinds of activities that the student would have participated in high school, volunteerism, leadership, foreign travel, whether you have veteran status or not, and there's a whole array of those as well. So in the admissions process, there's no one metric that's really used to admit a student or not. It's really done on looking at the whole record of the student. And in fact, the admissions office takes a lot of time doing this and normally looks at a student's file two or three times before a decision is made. So because of the holistic review process, we view high school rank as something that's very important in the admissions process, but not something that should probably be an overriding factor along with the other variables. A couple of data points that I wanted to mention, and then I wanted to turn it over to my colleague. One, and this creates a huge problem for us implementing this particular bill. For fall 16, 54% of Minnesota students submitted a rank. And so 46% of students did not report a rank, a high school rank. And that's because many of our high schools now don't report rank. So that would make it almost impossible to do this without that data point for this bill. The other data point that I think is important is that for those students for whom we have a rank, again, that would be the 56% or 54%, 95, 96, and 97% of those students in the top 10% were admitted to the university. So basically, nearly every student who was in the top 10% for whom we had a rank was admitted already. There were 2 or 3% that were not, and there were probably good reasons based on holistic review that those students were not admitted. So we think we basically accomplished this already. Use of a single variable rank would be problematic for us given the way we do admissions, and so we just wanted to bring those points to the table. And Associate Vice Provost Hernandez has a few additional points she'd like to make. Okay.
Thank you again, Chair Nornes and committee members. I just want to share, just to echo what Vice Provost McMaster just said, that student success is at the core of our holistic review process. It's an essential factor in contributing to the retention and graduation success of the university. And selecting students for admission on the basis of a single factor, high school rank or any other factor, we believe could put students at risk, and we want to make sure that our holistic process is really taken into account. It would limit our capacity to take other factors into account, into consideration, and specifically in our primary factors, the courses and the course rigor would be something that we could not consider. So that's some of the key information that really prepares or identifies student preparation for success in college. And we've seen, actually, when this a top 10% rule has been implemented in recent decades in other states, that there's actually a migration in many schools to less rigorous coursework, and students taking fewer courses that actually help to support their preparation for college. So when we think about our holistic review and the things that we take into consideration, we also take into account how we admit students, primarily Minnesota students, who might not meet what you would consider to be the typical profile of an admitted student at the university for programs like our Presence Emerging Scholars Program. So our holistic review also allows for us to identify students who could benefit from some of the programs that we have to support student success. Along those lines, fit, we find, is a strong contributing factor to student success. Our holistic process allows for us to identify a student's fit based both on their academic preparation and their interests for particular programs at the university. So it's important to us that we see students in high school continuing to focus on rigorous curriculum choices and performing in their courses. So our holistic review looks not only at high school rank as one of the factors among many, but it also looks very specifically at course progression. It looks at student grades in important courses and also student grade trends, so we can take into account any of those students who have achieved overcome factors in their academic work. In addition to the fact that we don't have high school rank for all the high schools, we also have to take into consideration that high schools across the state use varying forms of rank, so they can use weighted ranks. They could provide not just rank, but different kinds of formats, quartiles, et cetera. And so our holistic review really takes into account the context of an individual school and makes certain that we're making good decisions for students. What we found in our holistic review, and our data does show this, is that, as an example, for our fall 2016 freshman class, utilizing our holistic review, we had increases in the enrollment of the number of students from Minnesota at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities in the freshman class. We also had increases of greater Minnesota students enrolling, again, utilizing our holistic review. And we also achieved increases in racial and ethnic diversity in the freshman class. When you look at the data that's been provided, or the research that's been done about this top 10% rule, again, in recent decades, in particular, there was a report that was done by the Office of the President at the University of Texas at Austin that shows that the implementation of the top 10% rule did not change, remarkably, the geographic representation of students enrolling in the freshman class, nor did it change the diversity representation of underrepresented students significantly. So it's something we take seriously, geographic representation and also diversity, and we are seeing some positive results in our holistic review. One of the things that we also look at that we wanted to share are some of the implications that we might see in our particular state with such a rule. And one of the things that we have to consider is that with reciprocity agreements the way that they are, and with the language as it states that reciprocity students from reciprocity states are considered under the same eligibility requirements, that top 10% might implicate that we would have to admit more, or might require that we admit more students from Wisconsin or North and South Dakota. We may see more applications, and we have a concern that that might push out Minnesota students. We also have a concern about the timing of the decisions. Right now, the University of Minnesota utilizes a rolling admission process, and that means that we're able to roll admission decisions to students fairly quickly. If we were to move to a top 10% rule, it actually wouldn't cut down our workload, so it would actually increase the timing for many students. We could let students know if they were automatically admissible, but we still would have to spend the time to review them to determine to which colleges they would be admitted. And then we couldn't review other students until we completed that review of the top 10%. So we are achieving some positive diversity and geographic diversity results in our current holistic review.
Okay. Thank you very much. Minnesota State, I think, is next. We need to move along here. And I'll repeat many times that we're going to have to be very efficient with our time. We've got five more bills after this one, and so we want to be fair to everybody. So just concise, thorough, that's all we ask.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Ron Anderson, and I serve as the Senior Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs at Minnesota State. Minnesota State doesn't have an issue with House File 1878, as the admissions criteria that are outlined in the bill closely align with the admissions policies of our Minnesota State seven state universities. We are mildly concerned, however, about the bill's reporting requirement. Our experience has shown that the students coming to us from those top 10%, because of their high academic performance, are very likely to be successful, be retained, and complete in a timely manner. From the perspective of serving the greatest student need, we believe that our time is best served by focusing our energies on supporting our underprepared students and emphasizing strategies to improve their success. But we appreciate greatly the efforts of Representative Barr to provide opportunities for all of our Minnesota students and then enroll in higher education. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next, you want to slide over here so we can...
I think they're done.
Oh.
That's brevity.
I'm sorry if I put too much pressure on you. Oh, you did very well. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'll just add some closing remarks, a couple of things to consider. The University of Minnesota receives in appropriations $1.2 billion, and this is one of the most significant investments that we have here in our state. We have, our hardworking taxpayers investing money into our higher education here in Minnesota, and I think that their hardworking children who are in the top 10% of their classes should be able to access that, and quite frankly, I think they should be getting some priority over out-of-state student and other students. So I can appreciate some of the concerns that were raised, but I still think that we owe it to not only the taxpayers but also to our students to try to do whatever we can to retain our best and our brightest here in the state and have them be able to access a high-quality education. And I think something like an automatic admission is a very small, simple thing we can do to help ensure that.
We want to allow members to ask questions if they want to, and I guess we have one at least for from Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a question actually for the University of Minnesota if they'd like to come back down to the card table. And I apologize, Mr. Chair, I didn't get your name right up front.
It's Robert McMaster.
Mr. McMaster. So let me just describe to you what I would consider maybe a potential applicant. So this individual would exhibit, say, a 3.8 GPA, going on various mission trips, an Eagle Scout, active in student council, taught Sunday school, and is an outstanding athlete in soccer. He also scored a 32 on the ACT. As I would have described that individual to you, would have been on his application, would that have been a well-rounded, holistic pursuant to your review, would that have been an applicant that would have been chased after?
Mr. McMaster.
To attend the University of Minnesota.
Chair Nornes, Representative Albright. At face value, absolutely. That sounds like a spectacular student. Some of it would depend on what college that student applied to. If the student applied to the College of Science and Engineering, the student actually might be in the middle or toward the lower end. If the student applied to some other colleges, they might be in the upper to middle end. So it depends really on to which college they applied. And maybe my colleague would want to add something
to that. Chair Nornes and Representative Albright, I would say that that's a student we would definitely want to recruit to the university. We are strongly committed to, as Representative Barr mentioned, making sure that we are recruiting and enrolling Minnesota students and that we're keeping them in our home state.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Well, unfortunately, he was also in the top 5% of his class, but actually got a letter from the University of Minnesota saying that he was not accepted. So I think the point of Representative Barr's legislation, and I applaud you for bringing it forward, I think encourages the fact that we want to keep our best home, and that we want to chase after them with all vigor and with the opportunities that they would provide, because as we've heard around this table, if you go to school in this state, you stay in this state. And that is a very, very productive individual that we'd like to have as a citizen of the state. So that's just one example. I understand there are a whole host of others. They actually were just applying to, I believe it was the engineering department for theirs. So that being said, but with all those credentialings, I would expect that they would be chased after to attend the University of Minnesota. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other? Otherwise, Representative Barr, you have one last word, if you have one more.
No, I just want to thank Representative Albright for his comments. I agree that that would be someone that would be a highly qualified individual. And I would also like to point out, you know, our state is experiencing a workforce shortage. So I think anything we can do, to your point, Representative, to keep those students in our state. I'll just conclude with that and okay. Say I would respectfully ask for your vote on this bill.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Barr. House File 1878 then will be laid over for possible inclusion. Okay. Thank you. Next up is House File 1500, Representative Pryor. And we want to thank you for the other treats. There may still be some around somewhere. I'm working. I can't eat. Representative Pryor, this is your first bill in this?
It is my obviously. First bill. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nornes. And yeah. So the ones on the round trays I brought today, and I put them in the front next to the chair because I was instructed early on that everything goes through the chair. So
somebody.
And he graciously shared.
Would you like to move your bill then?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 1500.
And
to be laid over.
That was about it. Yes.
So, this is a bill that would extend the reach of a program that exists right now, and it's a popular program, a valuable program, the self-refi program, self-refinance, and it's something that I thought of when we were doing the overviews, and when I heard that we had this program for refinancing student loans. But one of the things that they were looking for was that you needed to have a credit score of 720. That struck me as, that's really, really high. Like, I don't know if I could get a refinance loan. So it's, and when I did a little research on that too, a credit score of 720 is good to excellent credit. So we're starting out that people that have these student loans, have the student loan debt, they either have to have a very high credit score to refinance or they have to have a cosigner. So what we're seeing is people that are outside that area, and what can we do to help that group of people that have these student loans? And I think when the program was first talked about in past years, the idea was to help more students, but to do that, we have to put money behind it. And so what the money would do is it would create a reserve fund, because when you have not such a strong credit rating, when you don't have a cosigner with a strong credit rating, more of those loans are likely to go bad. And so that's what we would be doing with this piece of legislation, is we could expand the reach of the self-refinance program, we could expand the reach, and we could do that because we could set aside money to guarantee the loans. What the bill is looking for is to create a reserve fund for the loans, and it would be $5 million in 2018 and $5 million in 2019. But that one-time money could create a long-term program to help students refinance their loans. So that's where the idea came from. I worked with the Department of Higher Education now, the people that are using the budget are working with these loans right now to get their expertise and their viewpoints of it, and I'll let them describe it more, and they will be open to questions. But end now by saying that this is a one-time investment, but it will have a long-term payoff. And so if you have kids that are thinking about their post-secondary education now, if they're thinking that they might have student loans, this could be a program that would be available to them in the future too, as well as people that have these student loans now. And what we know is that Minnesota has the fifth highest student loan debt load in the nation. So there's a lot of people out right now that have student loans that need help to get this financed, because this is a drain on our economy. These are people that are not advancing. They're not, you know, you can't buy a house when you have these big loans. You can't, you're not thinking about starting a family. You're not thinking about having kids because you've got this loan that you need to get rid of and move on from. So this is a way to help a new group of people.
You have testifiers. Would you like to begin by identifying yourself, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Marilyn Kosher. I manage the self-refi and the self-loan programs for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. And with me, I have Danette Jerry, our accounting manager. Since the self-refi program was launched in January of 2016, we have issued loans to about 880 borrowers, totaling $30 million. There is currently a $100 million cap on the program. The average loan is about $35,000, with the average age of borrowers in their early 30s. The largest interest rate reduction we've seen is 10%. However, people refinance for reasons other than interest rate reduction. They may be also looking to reduce their monthly payment, consolidate into one payment, or change from variable to fixed or fixed to variable. We plan to change our eligibility criteria even if state funding is not provided. If the state provides funding through this bill, we would expand eligibility criteria by further reductions in the FICO score eligibility and relaxing the debt-to-income requirements. The $5 million per year appropriation would allow us to make $25 million in loans for each $5 million under the expanded eligibility criteria. The appropriation would be used to fund a special bad debt reserve account, putting the risks of these loans on the state rather than on other borrowers in the self-refi and self-loan programs. The expanded eligibility criteria would be transparent to consumers. The identification of loans would be done by the office staff after the loans are approved.
Thank you. And next?
Chairman Nornes and committee members, I am here with Marilyn just as sister if she needed help.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I think she did well, but any questions of members of the Representative Pawlowski? Was this was under your watch, wasn't it?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, Senator Claussen had the bill in the Senate, and it took us the better part of a year to figure out a method so this would work. This is not easy legislation. The debt problem is huge, and we considered this a baby step, but it was a significant baby step. So as we move forward, we're going to have to be careful about how many steps the state can take because of the size of the problem. I'm on the bill, and I do think this is the path to go, but it is a very cautious path we should take, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your input and for your help. Any other comments, questions at all? Representative Pryor?
Well,
you did a good job on your first presentation.
Thank you.
And you have support here, I'm sure, as far as we can go, at least. So.
Right. So a couple points is that this is people are still paying back their loans. It's just that they'll have some flexibility in maybe changing from a variable rate to a fixed rate and lowering the monthly payments. They'll have that option. And, you know, in regards to how quickly we can move forward to helping people with the amount of debt that's out there, one thing about what's set up right now is that we protect the program that exists right now. It will be handled separately. So these new loans that are coming in, which would be riskier loans, to some degree. It would be set aside, and it would be this money that would be appropriated that we can handle some more risky loans. But it would be, you know, in terms of the work behind the scenes, it would be separated, the different kinds of loans, and that would be monitored. But the person coming forward for the refinancing, for them, they're all treated equally. They're not segmented out saying, oh, you know, we're not sure about you, and but they would come in and be treated equally as and dealt with as the same as everybody else.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that, but I'm going to repeat. It took a year to organize the method by which we would implement this. So whatever steps we take, I caution even us, if we do implement it, we make sure it works before we put it in place. And that's what the Office of Higher Ed did. They made sure this was going to work before you opened up the website, and it was fully tested. We, as you know, Mr. Chair, we've had trouble with some programs when they opened up a website, it didn't work right away. This one did, and it did because they had planned it, tested it, and then it was opened up to the public. So I agree, but every step we take, we should understand the totality of what our commitment is going to be, because the public, I think, would expect us to actually do what we said we're going to do.
All right. Wise words. So. Then House File 1500 will be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Norris.
Representative Lean. I see you've got two bills with you. That's good. Good point.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Saves you a trip back. So, House File, well, you can go ahead and make your own motion, okay. I guess, on your bill.
I will move House File 319 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
And, Mr. Chair, I do have an A1 amendment that I would like to move. This pertains largely to the administrative appropriation for the bill.
Okay. Any questions? Not all. Oops, excuse me. All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment has been adopted. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 319 is a bill to establish student debt forgiveness for people who completed a post-secondary degree and are working as full-time employees in Greater Minnesota. Student debt is a problem in Minnesota, as we just heard from Representative Pryor's testimony on the bill. Just to add to that a little bit, there are just about over 325,000 people in Greater Minnesota with just the federal debt, and those are people who attended college and are age 25 and older. And also, Minnesota is third in the country in terms of people, students who have debt, roughly 70% of students. Now, just to take this one step further to illustrate what this really means to our state's economy, in 2015, Minnesota had a roughly $328 billion gross state product. And so that represents a 1.9% increase between 14 and 15. So then if we take this bill and just, you know, hypothetically talking, if all the student debt in Greater Minnesota was cut in half, that would add roughly 1.5% to 1.6% to our state's economy. And so that's money that people who are my age, late 20s, early 30s, who would be able to spend right now on new homes, new cars, starting families, planning for weddings. So this is money that would go directly into our state's economy. And, Mr. Chair, members, at this time, I can just quickly walk through the bill. Section 1, Subdivision 1, establishes definitions in the bill. Subdivision 2 establishes the Greater Minnesota Loan Forgiveness Program. Subdivision 3 lays out eligibility for the program. Subdivision 4 pertains to the program's application. Subdivision 5 directs the Office of Higher Education Commissioner to prioritize applications from students when applications submitted exceed the amount of money appropriated for the program. Subdivision 6 establishes the maximum amount of loan forgiveness available to any one student or any one applicant in a 12-month period. Subdivision 7 mandates the Office of Higher Education Commissioner to disperse money directly to the applicant's loan servicer. Subdivision 8 establishes the program's fund. Subdivision 9 directs the Office of Higher Education Commissioner to report to the House and Senate Higher Education Committees on various items related to the program, which are laid out in the bill. Section 2 of the bill appropriates $10 million in fiscal 18 and 19 each for the program. Now, with the adopted amendment, an additional $300,000 is appropriated to the Commissioner's office for the program's administration so that we're not taking money away from the actual program itself. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, I do have some folks here who would like to testify on the bill.
All right, you can call them down at this time.
Chair Norris.
Welcome, and identify yourself, and also, like I said earlier, you know, be as concise as you can.
I'll do my best.
All right.
Chair Norris, members of the committee, my name is Jay Aerosmith DeCute. I am an entrepreneur from Grand Marais, Minnesota, and also the mayor of that city. I've been the mayor since 2014, and in the time that I've been mayor, we've addressed several issues having to do with the recruitment of new residents to our city and to the greater Cook County area as well. Cook County has the oldest average age of any county in the state of Minnesota, and we have been aggressively working in the past 5 to 10 years for recruiting people to return to Grand Marais or to the Cook County area, as well as recruiting people who have not did not grow up in that area to return or to move to that area. Right now, we are in a position where we have to import temporary workers for our hospital for the healthcare situation. We have also to contract temporary workers for some of our social services that are provided through the county, and we are having difficulty recruiting educators for the high school, which is the only high school in Cook County. So that's one hat that I'm wearing, the mayor hat, so I can put the student hat back on. I am a graduate of St. Olaf College. It was 11 years ago that I graduated from St. Olaf College. I'm still carrying several tens of thousands of dollars of student debt. My education allowed me to pursue being an entrepreneur in a community that I love, and also gave me the lifestyle that I was able to then get involved in public service in my community to try and make a difference. The burden of my student loan debt basically caused my wife and I to have to find a home via contract for deed. We lived in a yurt, if you guys know what that is, out in the woods before we bought our house. And after we end up buying our house contract for deed, because we were not able to secure a formal mortgage because of the student loan debt that I'm carrying, then we now are able to start a business out of our home. And I was able to leverage that home in order to start a second business. So right now things are working pretty well for me because I have managed to start these businesses. However, my student loan debt is still something that has prevented me from reaching a level of success that I would have expected or that I would really have thought I could find in a metro area or something like that. Disparity in pay that exists in a rural area between that and a metropolitan area is something that I believe this bill addresses. I believe that according to the Center, University of Minnesota's Center for Small Towns, it's out of University of Minnesota Morris, there's a lot of data that's out there that shows that students want to return to their hometowns. They want to live in a rural area, and they are unable to do so because of the disparities in pay. This bill would do a great deal to reinvigorate, and is a very innovative way to reinvigorate the rural areas of our state. And I believe that we would see the ripples of that going far deeper than having people to fill the positions that I mentioned before. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on this.
Thank you for being here, and good luck with your ventures. And if you'd say Hello to Myron Bersheim when you're up there.
Oh, I love Myron. Myron and I, we've sung and played guitar together a lot.
We're related. Okay, who's next? I've got 12 guitars at home. Who's next?
Good afternoon, Chair Nornes and Committee. My name is Maddie Wagner. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today. I'm a student at St. Cloud State University who will be graduating this May. I have been looking for jobs in multiple cities, but one of my preferred cities to live in next year is Duluth, which is located in Greater Minnesota. Although I am a recipient of the Minnesota State Grant and have worked multiple jobs throughout college, I will still be graduating with debt. This proposed loan forgiveness program not only makes cities in Greater Minnesota more desirable for me as a soon-to-be graduate, but it would also relieve the financial burden of student loans myself and so many other students face. While we believe low tuition is the best way to financially help students, a loan forgiveness program for students working in Greater Minnesota would be very beneficial for graduates' financial and career success. As a college senior, I cannot stress enough how much this bill would help me and other students throughout the state. Thank you for making higher education students a priority.
Okay. Thank you for being here, too. Next. Identify. Would you like to know who you are?
Hello, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Molly O'Neill. I was born and raised in Cook County, and I left to attend college out of state for a couple of years and finished actually through a pilot program at UMD that allowed me to be a completely off-campus student. When I graduated in 2006, I had roughly $55,000 in student loan debt, both federal and private. I've made less than a $10,000 dent in that in the last 8 years. And on the current repayment schedules that I have, I will be 48 before those loans are repaid in full. That puts me pretty close to retirement to be still paying student loan debt. And frankly, that's a choice that I have to make at this point, is choosing between making student loan payments and saving for retirement. When I returned to Cook County, I've been working full-time in the county for the past 8 years, 9 years, I guess. And the income that I've had during that time each year was between $27,000 and $38,000, and that was between two and four jobs each year. I can't get the financing needed to add running water to my home. I have a very small house. It does have electricity, but I'm a single income household, age 33. I'm the face of the demographic that has been statistically explained to you. What this means to me is a choice every month to continue to live without running water because I cannot get the financing to add a well and septic, which is the only option in a rural area. I'm grateful for the opportunity to tell my story because it's been a great source of stress, not only financially, but to be feeling so helpless about it for the last decade. So I greatly appreciate your time today in listening to what this means on a personal level. It is definitely a factor in why I don't have children yet. It's also a factor in why I drive the car that I do, why I live in the situation that I do. And the bottom line is that I love where I live in Greater Minnesota. The amount of recreation and outdoor opportunity that we have in Cook County is why we're also a tourism destination, which is what my current job is in now. So it's where I want to be, but it certainly is tough to make a go of it there. There's a certain pride that comes with roughing it, but that's certainly not a lifestyle I would be choosing just for the bragging rights. So, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to be here, too. Not sure if we have any questions. Ms. Representative Lean, you want to slide back into the microphone there?
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. I'd certainly entertain any questions, but I'm just appreciative of the time and attention you're giving to this issue in my bill today.
We have a question. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lean, looking over the definitions and the summary that was provided to us, and Subdivision 4 talks about the application process, but I don't, I'm going to apologize in advance, but it comes like a trust and verify. Where would authentication of being employed in the rightful businesses be identified to the agency for payment of the $3,000 per year?
Representative Lehan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright. I assume that would be, the bill does say it's an application in a form and manner made by the commissioner, so I assume that would be a part of the process. I would think the office would want to verify if they're going to be helping people with this money that indeed they are working for this company.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure the agency was aware of the fact that it is incumbent upon them to take care of the verification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Albright. I have also spoken with the agency about the administrative cost of this and just, you know, double-checking that they will have the resources to thoroughly vet the program to make sure that people applying are indeed eligible.
Representative Jessup, or Albright, were you done? Okay. Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Lee, I understand the objective. We definitely need, we'll say, graduates out in greater Minnesota. My question is this the best vehicle to get us there? As the testifiers have mentioned, you know, some of them just love Cook County, for example. I, in fact, love Cook County as well. I love Grand Marais, I love the Boundary Waters. It's a great area. But our challenge is to get more individuals who may not have a love for a particular area to actually be, let's say, in greater Minnesota. Tell me a little bit more about your conviction that this type of program will, in fact, deliver more young adults to greater Minnesota.
Representative Lehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jessup, I think that this would indeed help that issue. We have not just some of the income disparities, but also some of the population disparities. We hear about the brain drain, people leaving greater Minnesota, and often that may be for more exciting lifestyle, more amenities, whatever the case would be in the metropolitan area, but a lot of the times it's just because people don't have those job availabilities or that income availability that is in the metropolitan area. I mean, those areas do have higher paying jobs, they do have more opportunities for people. So doing what we can, and I'm certainly open to other suggestions, other ways to deal with this issue, but this is one way that we can not just help people with student debt, and I do agree, you know, on the front of it, we do need to get a handle on tuition. But for people who, you know, are already finished school and whatever the case may be, this is a way to help them with that. It's also a way to get people back into those greater Minnesota communities. Along with that brain drain, I do often hear about people who want to move, you know, they're in their early 30s, mid-30s, and they want to move back to the rural parts of the state, but the income is just not there. The opportunities are just not there. So this would be a way, not the end-all, be-all solution, but certainly a way to address this issue.
Representative Fryer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to understand this better, too. Is when people are getting this loan forgiveness, is there a time, amount of time they need to live in greater Minnesota? I mean, could they move to a city, be there for a year, get the loan forgiveness, and then move back to the metro area?
Representative Lee?
Mr. Chair, members, technically, yes, they could. You know, but this is also a five-year eligibility. So my thoughts are people would be living there for more than just 1 year, and through that time establish some roots in the communities. Their kids may be going to school. So, you know, I guess I would think that would better help people to establish roots and make greater Minnesota their home.
All right. There's no other questions. House File 319 will be laid over for possible inclusion. And moving on to House File 320, would you, Representative Lehan? You can.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I will move House File 320 To be heard, and I assume this would go to taxes.
That's correct.
To be heard and referred to taxes.
That's correct.
All right, thank you. And I do have an A2 amendment that I would like to move right away. And the A2 amendment largely applies to the application and, again, the administrative appropriation for the bill.
All right, any questions? Hearing none. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the amendment is adopted. Okay.
All right, Mr. Chair, members, again, I thank you for hearing this bill, House File 320. This bill would establish a tax credit, which I have been calling the Scholarship Build Credit, for private sector employers that make cash or in-kind contributions to Minnesota State School Foundations. Private sector contributions to school foundations is a model that has worked for some businesses, schools, and students to fill jobs, educate students, and help people with education costs. I drafted House File 320 to spur more activity under this model and more cooperation between businesses, schools, and students across the state. Cash contributions would be used for school or student scholarships, while in-kind contributions would be used for equipment for hands-on learning in the classroom. Mr. Chair, members, I will now go through the different sections of the bill. Section 1 establishes that data related to the scholarship build credit is classified, except for the reporting requirements, which are laid out later in the bill. Section 2, Subdivision 1, establishes definitions of the bill. Subdivision 2 establishes the scholarship build credit and parameters around the credit. Subdivision 3 sets out the process for certification and allocation of the scholarship build credits, and this process was modeled and based off of the angel investment credit and is necessary as there is a fixed appropriation for the credit. Subdivision 4 establishes the contribution must be made by October 15th of the tax year in which the scholarship build credit is claimed. Subdivision 5 establishes that data under the submitted under Subdivision 2 and 4 is private, except for that which is necessary for reporting purposes. Section 2, Subdivision 6, pertains to the scholarship build credit reporting that must be done beginning March 15, 2019, and every year thereafter to the House and Senate Tax and Higher Education Committees. Section 3 establishes the scholarship build credit into law with additional components of the program. Section 4, as amended, appropriates $300,000 in each fiscal year, 2018 and 19, to administer the scholarship build credit. And Section 5 establishes in law the intended purpose of the scholarship build credit as it is a tax expenditure. Mr. Chair and members, I do have with me Mike McGee from the Minnesota State System for additional comments on the bill.
All right. Invite him down. Welcome to the committee, and begin by identifying yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Mike McGee. I'm Assistant Director for Education Industry Partnerships for Minnesota State. I've spent the last 26 years at various campuses in the metro area, including Normandale, MCTC, and Hennepin Tech, as a faculty member and academic dean. The last couple of years have been in my present position with Minnesota State. I want to thank Representative Lean for his advocacy for the Minnesota State campuses. In my campus positions, I've seen the tremendous impact strong business and community partnerships have on program vitality and on student outcomes. Your recognition of the importance of business, industry, and community relationships is appreciated. Campuses are connected in a variety of ways to business partners, such as through advisory committees and utilizing business sites for internships and other workplace-based experiences. Often businesses are donors, assisting programs with cash or in-kind equipment donations. These partnerships and efforts, like what is encouraged through this bill, could increase the number of connections to business and industry and the community in general and be a positive force for Minnesota State institutions and for great learning experiences. Thank you.
Thank you. Members have questions? Hearing none, it's back to you, Representative Lee.
All right. Thank you again, Mr. Chair, and committee members for your attention to my bill. I appreciate it.
All right, House File 320. Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 320, as amended, be referred to the Tax Committee. All those in favor, say aye. Back to vote, members. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. I was hoping they weren't all going to vote no.
Me too.
So, thank you very much. The bill then is passed and referred to the Tax Committee. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, we're going to move, if you're looking at the agenda, we're going to take House File 1409 next, which happens to be mine. Representative Albright will be back. He's presenting in a different committee at this time, I guess. So I'll move House File 1409 before us and for possible inclusion. We have a number of folks that are here to testify. And first of all, I'll just kind of give you a little overview of the bill. House File 1409 deals with teacher candidates of color, which we hear a lot. First of all, there's a shortage of teachers. It seems all over the state. And this bill specifically is dealing with teachers of color. It establishes a scholarship program, that's section one. And I'll be as brief as I can here because, again, we have a lot of testifiers. Provides grants to student teachers in shortage areas, which is very important. And that's about as brief as I can be. It's a good thing to try and find ways to attract teachers, again, whoever they might be, but in this case specifically those of color. And so I'd like to at this time begin hearing from the witnesses, and I don't know if this is in any particular order. Is it?
Yes.
Is there Dennis Olson in the room? That's you? Okay. Well, then thank you for putting this together as far as the list is concerned.
Yes.
Do you want to begin, first of all, with some opening testimony and identify yourself first?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Violeta Hernandez, and I am here on behalf of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. We're here to do a joint testimony, but I would like my colleagues to introduce themselves as well, please.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for listening to this very important piece of legislation. My name is Kade Wallace, and I'm the legislative coordinator for the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. Dennis Olson, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. Appreciate the opportunity this afternoon to allow us to support House File 1409 on behalf of the Indian Affairs Council.
And Mr. Chair, I apologize. One of our other representatives from the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans stepped out for a second, so he will join us at some moment.
Sure.
I will read testimony.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, as representatives of the State Ethnic Councils and the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, we would like to express our strong support of House File 1409. In your folders, you will find a joint letter of support from all of our councils. As state agencies, we are primarily charged with advising you on behalf of the ethnic and racial minority Minnesotans, who collectively represent 19% of the state's population. While each of our council's constituent communities are widely diverse in history, culture, assets, and challenges, our communities have some shared issues of concern. Two of these issues are the achievement gap and the shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. These two issues are interconnected and affect each other. Research shows that teachers of color overall improve achievement, particularly for students of color. However, while Minnesota student body is 31% students of color and American Indian, only 4.2% of the state's public school teachers are of color and American Indian, including only 973 Asian Pacific Islander, 690 African American, 629 Hispanic, and only 249 American Indian teachers. These issues not only impact our specific communities, but the whole of Minnesota as we seek to maintain a competitive economy, skilled labor force, and quality of life in the face of changing demographics and an increasing number of retirees. In 2015, Governor Dayton and the Minnesota legislature enacted legislation setting a target that 70% of Minnesotan adults ages 25 to 44 will have attained a post-secondary certificate or degree by 2025. According to data collected by the Office of Higher Education and the State Demographer's Office, average attainment rates for Asian students are over 60%, Black students are at 35%, Hispanic students are at 24%, and 21% for American Indian students. The scholarships and student teaching grants in this bill are needed to close achievement gaps and help the state reach its higher education attainment goal. In essence, by investing in diverse teacher candidates, we would be doubling the return on investment by helping more students complete their degrees so they in return can help increase K-12 achievement and get more students of color into post-secondary education. We thank Representative Norris for his leadership on the issue and urge you to also support House File 1409, and we thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much for that very well, good presentation. Now, I don't know which order we're going to go in, but...
Do you have sorry, Mr. Chair, the order?
I have an order, is that...
Yes, we minute? Should go, please, and...
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Porter, would that be the next person? No?
The next group.
Who is it?
The next group. Just hold it. Sorry, I don't have one. Dr. Porter and...
I've got it. Is it Chang?
Yes.
Yep. Yay?
Yep, yeah. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Yue Cheng. People also call me Pearl. I'm a teacher candidate at Rosemont High School. I identify as Asian. It was extremely hard financially to do student teaching last year. As an international student myself, I have H-1 student visa. I was not allowed to work. Student teaching was unpaid full-time. Internship plus $1,000 of tuition. I had to ask my friends for money and house, and student teaching itself was very challenging. I was desperately looking for people to help me, and also people to carpool with scholarships. If I could likely have had scholarship or some stipend as student teacher, I would have had more hope in my future career. I'm one of very few international students who enter into education field because people know medical or technology field has paid internships. Thank you for your support of this bill.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. I'm not sure I'm going to get the name right here. Dilly?
No, actually not.
All right. I was phonetically spells things, and that doesn't work in today's age. So, would you tell me how you pronounce your name?
Oh, actually, I'm not that person.
Oh, you're not even the person. Well, that's even more of a problem. So then, who are you?
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Selena Hernandez.
Okay.
And I am a special education teacher, potential teacher at Ramon Llull Community College, and I identify as Hispanic.
Okay.
So I have a little speech. Many people would consider themselves busy. Being a student of color and first generation college students, I find that we have to work hard and sometimes even harder for what we want to achieve. My mother cannot afford to financially support me in my education or in life in general. Being Hispanic means that I have to be my mother's keeper. It means that I have to help my brothers keep on track in school. Being Hispanic also means that I have to occasionally financially support my family. This bill will help equip me to dedicate much needed time to my education, to reach my goal, which is to become a special education teacher that empowers your students to embrace their differences and work towards constant and daily improvement. Thank you for the support of this bill.
Okay. Very important job that you're working on, becoming a special education teacher.
Yeah.
Who's next? Why don't you just go ahead and identify yourself?
Hamidapiapiate, Chair and members. Hello, my name is Vanessa Goodthunder, and my Dakota name is Masnawi. I am a teacher candidate at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, and my goal is to become a social studies and Dakota language teacher. And finances are no joke. Every cent counts and every cent is felt. So for me personally, throughout my undergraduate degree, I was able to make it through all on scholarships. My mom was the first to graduate in high school, and I was the first to graduate in college this past May. So graduate school hit us. We were not prepared for it. We were only preparing for me to become the first graduate in my undergraduate degree. And so I didn't know, or I guess I didn't comprehend that I wouldn't be getting some of the grants or scholarships I received before, and I didn't know how to pay for my graduate school. The program I'm in now is so intense that we have been asked not to take a job on the side, and I don't know how I'm supposed to focus on my dream while simultaneously thinking about how I'm going to pay for schooling, books, travel, food, and other expenses. So this scholarship or teaching grants would really help me throughout my time becoming the teacher I would like to be. So, pidana yapi ayahet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And welcome to you, too. Now, identify yourself for the record here, please.
Got it. My name is Najma. Hello, Chair and members. My name is Najma, and I'm a teacher candidate at the Hamline University. In this state, in the Twin Cities especially, Somali community is growing every day. Parents, students, the community, and I myself are in desperate need of Somali educators. And growing up, I've never had a parent attend a teacher conference or knew of what type of activities I was a part of. Every parent needs to be involved in their child's education, and in Somali community, they're not. It's something that they chose not to be a part of their students. Their kids' education. They don't understand the education system, also the language barrier. And by becoming an educator, I hope I can fix that, and I hope I can help in that as well. Not just to teach, but also have teachers get involved in their kids' education. Thank you for supporting this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. And who is next? Whoever wants to start, just tell me your name and we'll go ahead. All right, go ahead. Thank you.
Chair and members, my name is Hosab Mohammed, and I'm a teacher candidate at Metro State University. And my goal is to become a K-6 teacher and work my way up to become a principal.
I didn't hear what kind of teacher you wanted to be.
K-6.
K-6.
Yes, and then hopefully work my way up to become a teacher.
Great.
No, my bad, I have principal, sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good goal. Very good goal.
Thank you. I identify myself as an African Somali. I'm a student who does not receive help from their parents. I work full-time as a paraprofessional. I teach ELL, and I also have another evening job to financially support myself. Also, I'm a full-time student who's trying so hard to finish in the summer. I can't afford paying for summer classes or student teaching at the moment, and I'm so close to finishing. I've been stressing that because I don't know if I'm eligible for any grants. If I receive any financial support, not only will I be grateful, but also so glad that I'm one step closer to becoming a teacher. I cannot wait to start making a difference. I mean, the job that I currently work in, I am slowly making a difference, and it brings me a great deal of joy. And I don't want to wait another year simply because of financial issues, and no other students shouldn't have to wait either. I feel as though that I am that voice for students who are on the rise and the teachers who are going to come after me, especially for those who are Somali as well. And as one of the candidates has said as well, there are not many Somali teachers, and currently I am the mediator between the teachers and the students. And if we had more teachers of color, students would be more understood. And that's the struggle that we have every day and that I'm currently facing. And thank you for supporting this bill.
Okay. And when do you intend to graduate? How close are you to finishing?
I will be graduating this December.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you very much for your testimony. And who's next?
Good afternoon. I'm Yuri Tesfe. I'm the Collaborative Urban Educator, East African Student-to-Teacher Program Coordinator at Oxford College. Thank you, Chair Nornis, and the rest of the committee for having us today. In 2012, with the urging of East African, local East African leaders, Augsburg College became the recipient of FICU funding to recruit, retain, and license teachers of East African origin. East covers tuition towards initial licensure and provides cost of living stipend during student teaching. This is our second funding cycle, and we have 25 teachers of East African origin to date, representing licensures in elementary, secondary math, secondary social studies, special education, and EL. Six are currently licensed and teaching in the schools. The remaining are either in the process of obtaining their licensure or are currently enrolled at Augsburg. All of this would not be possible without the full tuition support and student teaching stipend we provide to East scholars. During the student teaching semester, our students, most of whom have families to support, struggle to generate revenue to cover cost of living. As a result, beginning in 2005, our program implemented cost of living stipend to support the students in addition to tuition coverage to support them with cost of living stipend. As we aim to increase the number of licensed teachers of color in Minnesota, removing financial and other identified barriers among teacher candidates of color is a crucial step. This has been an important factor in retaining our scholars through the licensure program, and thank you for supporting the bill.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Layla Sahal. I am a graduate at Augsburg. I am a graduate student at Augsburg College. I am a recipient of the EAST Program Scholarship. I am pursuing my elementary license, and I would like to thank the state and legislators for allowing us to have the EAST Scholarship. I know that for a fact that I would not be pursuing my educational career goals if it was not for this scholarship. I'm a mother of three with a one-home, one-income household, and for that reason, the scholarship allowed me to go back into the school and pursue my educational career. As you know, teachers do not go into the workforce for the money. They go in because of the passion and the commitment to help future students succeed in life. And I would like for the committee to support this scholarship because students of color are willing to and are committed to become teachers and educators and pass on the blessings that they have received in their educational careers so that other young students can benefit and other young students can have the opportunities and skills that they need to succeed. Having teachers of color not only affects students that are minorities themselves, but it also affects the school system and how they are run, administration, the higher education departments, and also students that are not minorities and their curiosity and their willingness to find out what else is out there in the world and things like that. And my field experience shows that every day students are asking, what are you wearing and where are you from and your name is pretty and things like that. That's why it's vital to have students of color in the classroom. And truth be told, it is because of scholarships and grants and the support of the state that gets us through this. Thank you.
All right. And what Are you elementary or high school or what?
Elementary licensing.
Elementary. Okay. All right. I guess we can entertain questions at any time, but I think we called up some prior. That's a question.
I can also wait.
Oh, okay.
Whenever.
All right. We have a few more testifiers, I believe. So if they want to come down at this time. Welcome to both of you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Brett Grant. I serve on the course steering committee of the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. Our coalition was founded a little over a year ago in December 2015 by 40 people from K-12 schools, various colleges, and community organizations. Since then, we have held two conferences where we have engaged hundreds of stakeholders and drafted bills based on their input and research about the most significant barriers to the profession for people of color. House File 1409 is one of those bills. We now have nearly 800 members from more than 150 different schools, districts, higher ed institutions, and community organizations from throughout Minnesota. And we're all dedicated to reaching two goals by 2020. One is to double the number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers from 4% to 8%. And the other goal is to increase the state's total of racially, ethnically diverse candidates in teacher preparation programs from 9% to at least 20%.
Mr. Chair, members,
welcome.
My name is Paul Spies. I'm also a member of the Course Steering Committee for the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color. I'd like to thank Chair Nornes for your leadership in authoring this bill and all the other co-authors on the bill, including Representative Lean. My first teacher of color was Dr. Andrew Conte at Morehead State University, someone we both know very well. He says hello. He was our political science professor in my sophomore year of college, and he changed my life. His son is my son's godfather. So we're still friends today, 30 years later. We have tremendous support for this bill from the communities. We have tremendous support in the Senate. We just came from a hearing at 1 o'clock in the Senate, and it was laid over there. And we have an E-12 bill that complements this higher ed bill to address the issues in education in the K-12 schools that complement the need for student support in higher education for those people who want to be teachers. So our state is in a crisis, and even if we do double from 4 to 8%, like Brett said, by 2020 with a significant investment, we're still going to be in crisis because of the demographics of our state, where 31% of our students are of color, and 59% in the metro area, and 20% in greater Minnesota. So we're asking you to consider as much investment as possible with your targets that you'll be getting. To date, what we've been doing as a state has been funding small programs. And it can be likened to putting water in a bucket and trying to irrigate a garden or maybe even a farm. What we need is a whole large farm irrigation system that's coordinated. And this bill, along with the E-12 bill, that is House File 2077, would do that. We have provided you a long list of education organizations, along with the Ethnic Councils and the Indian Affairs Council, on the back of our bill summary. You can see that list of organizations. And we provided you with a menu of appropriation options that would hit different targets based on whatever money that you can devote to this important effort. That's going to do two things. Like Violeta Hernandez said with the Council of Latino Affairs, it's doubling the return of our investment to address the achievement gap and address higher entertainment goals and address this problem of a low percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. So we thank you so much for your support and entertain any questions.
All right. Members, if you have questions? Or Sir Pryor.
Thank you, Chair Nornes. And I'm not sure who this question would be addressed to, but first of all, I think this is a great piece of legislation. It just seems to be the quickest, most direct way to change things and increase the number of teachers of color. I mean, scholarships and grants, that makes a lot of sense. My question is that the legislation includes 5% administration costs, and I'm just wondering, legislation we saw before had a 3% administration cost. Is that a standard figure for what it would be to handle something like this?
We'll hand it over to Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, I don't know if there's one single number sort of as a standard administrative cost. It sort of varies from bill to bill and program to program, and I would also say department to department.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, we worked with the Office of Higher Education, consulting with them about 4 hours in drafting this bill, and we still have some more work to do. We got some more recent feedback on ways it can be further strengthened. But one of the things that our original draft had was a certain amount, and we were informed by the Office of Higher Education that they really need a certain 5% to make sure that these programs get administered well and in the hands of teacher candidates.
So I think that needs to be determined. Okay. Any other questions? I thank all the testifiers. You did a good job of Representative Umar.
Thank you, Chair. I don't really have a question, but I just wanted to add my voice of support to this bill. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to invest in something that is going to be very impactful. I had the privilege of having teachers of color and principals of color in the schools that I went to, and it had a profound impact on my life, and I think for our students here that are going through the school system, it is really important for them to be able to have the opportunity to see and be educated by people who look like them, who grow up in the same cultures and neighborhoods, and I think that deep connection to be able to relate to certain things are important in a time where a lot of young students are going through a lot of things. So thank you all for bringing this up, and thank you, Chair, for authoring this.
Thank you very much. The House file, unless there's any concluding other comments that haven't been made already, but I think you did a good job.
Mr. Chair, Representative Omar, I just hope that one of my regrets this afternoon was that you had to leave while several of our testifiers made their comments, and I hope that you get to meet them later. I'm sure they would enjoy that meeting. Thank you.
Then House File 1409 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. Okay, we have one last bill to deal with today, and this is an Albright bill. So, Representative Pulaski, would you care to move that bill and present it for us?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill, and I'll present it. I can present it from here,
sure,
if you want me to.
House File 1721.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a Representative Albright's bill, but it's something that actually we've been working on since 2013. The section of law that you're dealing with and the nine previous sections above Section 10, we actually drafted with the help of the legislative auditor in 2013. And this was to bring more of a focus on budgets when we were doing the budgets of higher education, particularly the University of Minnesota, and what was then the Minsky system and now the Minnesota State system. And the intent of this was for us to have a better understanding of where the money was being spent and how it was being spent. The Albright bill, which I'm a co-author of, and I see Representative Warnes is too, adds one more component. That's on page 2, section 10. And I'm just going to read it. Data on work completed by any consultant who is not an employee of the system for which the system is paid in excess of $500,000. Data must include the name of the consultant, the total cost incurred, a description of the work completed, descriptions of the reasons for using an outside consultant, and not internal staff. We have had a plethora of increases in consulting in higher education. It would seem they can't do anything without consulting from somewhere else and not at a small rate of money. We have seen, for instance, consulting for a name change of Minsky to Minnesota State. And apparently that was $600,000 to start, and we don't know what the final result of that will be, but it's likely to be large. We have seen consultants hired to help get a new chancellor, and they got three. They rejected all three. And apparently that was $175,000, and now we're going to start again. So the bill would now have a reporting component that we would at least take a look at consultants of $500,000 or more. And I would hope, Mr. Chair, that, and I'm saying this, not Representative Albright, so he may disagree, but that we may actually take a look at reducing that number, so that we may have better access to more of these consultant fees and exactly how they're being used and the totality of consultant fees. Despite what you hear from Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota, they're not exactly shy of administrators. They do have people in place that should be able to do the work that's being paid out of the shop for some of these tasks. And I would hope that we would use this in the budget bill for 2017, and then we'd have an ongoing discussion in 2017 and 2018 of exactly how these consulting fees are being used. So, Mr. Chair, I know Representative Albright isn't here, and I'll do my best to move forward with this, but this, again, is his bill. I'm supporting it, and I've just added a caveat of how we may want to continue this discussion on the reporting of consulting fees as we move forward with the budget process, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo my support for this bill. I had a similar bill last session dealing with consulting fees and contracts and things specifically toward Minnesota State. So good to see this is also directed at the University of Minnesota. But just wanted to say I support the bill, and I'm glad that we're still focusing on this, moving forward with it.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? All right. You did well.
Mr. Chair, just one final word here. Representative Albright and I have worked on a number of things this session. This is one of them. And I think it does point to the fact that we can work in a bipartisan way, and we should work in a bipartisan way in a budget committee.
Right.
We are going to, and you've heard the numbers today, we are going to be working with billions of dollars of commitment. That commitment isn't just over 2 years. That commitment will probably impact decades, as you've seen with the issues with student debt and also tuition. So I want to thank Representative Albright. I enjoy working with him, and I hope that we can continue to work together and have a good bill by the time you give us a target number, Mr. Chair.
All right. Sooner than later, hopefully. Okay. If there's no other questions, comments, editorials, whatever you want to, birthdays, anniversaries, none of that. Okay, then we're adjourned.